freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free.
Welcome back, everyone, to Patriot Coalition Live. I'm Matthew Nugent.
And I'm Jason Marocek.
Thanks for joining us today, everybody. Our goal is to create a timeless resource to teach about the U.S. Constitution and the proper role of government, the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage, how to defend against threats to our republic. Folks, we have a new email address. It's freedom@patriotcoalitionlive.com. That's freedom@patriotcoalitionlive.com. Please send us a line. We would love to hear what's on your mind. Or if there's anything you'd like us to cover, a question you have, please let us know. Okay, y'all ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this. Today, we are talking about the preamble to the U.S. Constitution, okay? All right, so a little context here. The Articles of Confederation, also known as Constitution 1.0 or the beta version, okay, it failed because it was more like a treaty between 13 countries than a document uniting the 13 states into a United States of America. Here's a note that a lot of people don't know or may have forgotten about the Articles of Confederation. The only branch of government under the, for the central government, okay, of course, there's a state government and there's a central government, okay, which people typically refer to as the federal government, but the correct word is the central government. The only form of central government or branch and form of central government under the Articles of Confederation was the Congress, okay? There was no judicial or executive branch. It was similar to the United Nations. It basically, they made laws, but there was no enforcement element to it, okay? The Constitution was created to replace the Articles of Confederation, and the preamble is the introduction to the United States Constitution, written during the Constitutional Convention of 1787, and it went into effect in 1789.
That's right. So we're going to start by just reading the text of the preamble, and then we're going to dig into it. So here's the preamble to the U.S. Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Love that. Every time I read it or Jason reads a document like that, it's like almost like a prayer. Thank you, Jason, for reading it.
Of course. Yeah, so as we talk about the preamble, the first thing that comes to mind is, why do we have it? What's the purpose of it, right? And and the preamble to the U.S. Constitution answers the question, why are we creating this Constitution? Why is it even necessary? It was, you know, this is sort of a meeting before the meeting, if you will. Yep. It's if we're going to talk about why we're going to come and together and create a document, we ought to probably have a reason to do it. So let's start with kind of what led up to the creation of the Constitution, just briefly, right? So if you remember, and if you listened to our last episode, we talked about how after even towards the end of the War of Independence and afterwards, the founding fathers realized that the Articles of Confederation were not working very well. And so there was a group of founders led by James Madison. Actually, it was James Madison who said, you know what, let's meet and talk about all these problems that we're having with our original Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. And so he said, let's meet in Annapolis. We're going to go to Annapolis and we're going to have a convention there with, you know, as many delegates as we can, you know, bring in from all the different states.
Yeah. And only about 12 showed up representing five states. And if you guys ever want to look at an example of success through failure, the United States is one. the Articles of Confederation is one. James Madison going out there and saying, hey, let's all get together. Only 12 delegates showed up representing five states. So for those of you who don't know, I mean, Jason and I are West Point grads, and there's a big Army-Navy thing going on here. Okay. So Jason and I are like, of course it failed. It was at Annapolis, which Annapolis is where the United States Naval Academy is. But anyway, just but something good did come out of Annapolis, and Jason will talk about that here.
Yeah, it happens to be the only, the last good thing that ever came out of Annapolis. To this day, nothing still has come good has come out of Annapolis. So,
except for maybe the Navy SEALs and some awesome Marines, as well as some other special organizations. We'll say like
that. All right, so
we couldn't go on without saying it, guys. It's just
it had to happen. Yeah, December is a long way away at this point. We've got to get some shots in. Anyways, so. You know, these founders, some of them met in Annapolis. As Matt said, there are only five states are represented. They came to the conclusion, say, hey, if we're going to change things, doing it with only five states is not the way to do it. So let's make a plan to come together in Philadelphia next May in 1787. And hopefully we'll have more representation from the states to figure out how we can fix this. So there was... You know, the Articles of Confederation, they that what came out of that Annapolis Convention was that one of the phrases that a resolution that these delegates made, even though they didn't decide on anything, what they did decide on and what came out of that was good, was this last resolution in the document that they came up with. And it says, the Articles of Confederation ought to be so corrected and enlarged as to accomplish the objects proposed by their institution, namely common defense, security of liberty, and general welfare. Mm-hmm. So that's what these delegates at the Annapolis Convention decided. These were the things that we needed to correct when we meet next May. So ultimately, they did come together in May of 1787. That's when the Constitutional Convention kicked off, and it went through September. So for 4 months, from May to September, these guys, these founders, these brilliant men, these super very wise men, actually we call them the framers because they framed the Constitution. Mm-hmm. They sat in imagine those stuffy clothes that they had, you know, wool and stockings and everything, right through the middle of, I don't know if you've ever been to Philadelphia in the summer, but it gets pretty stuffy.
A little humidity, a little moisture in the air.
Yeah. So they sat through all of that. No air conditioning, of course. And so they worked on this document for that whole time. And so they, and the way that it happened is they started filtering in May, and they would present their credentials and their commissions, right? So their credentials being, okay, this is who I am, and I come from this state. I'm officially a delegate. And the commissions were basically what their states allowed them to do or not do on behalf of their state. So they filtered in, they met each other. A lot of them knew each other already, but they presented their credentials and their commissions, and they got down to work.
So a commission is kind of like it's permission and authority. Today, if you are a commissioned officer in the military, where do the commissions come from? The commander in chief, which is the president of the United States. Right. And each commission has the president's probably digitally signed a name on it.
I think so.
You know, so in fact, I've got, no, that's not my commission. That's my, Jason, I know you have one too, a graduation certificate from West Point. So, all right, so the next element of discussion to paint a picture of the evolution of the preamble, because none of the Constitution came out of thin air. Jason mentioned that for 4 months straight, people were meeting, are the framers of our Constitution, were meeting every single day in hot, stuffy rooms and in stockings. That's always I chuckle when I say stockings, you know. Were they Christmas stockings? No. And wool clothes. So for 4 months straight, they're working.
You and I have some experience with wool clothes in weather.
Okay, up north, you know, you gotta go. I'm recruiting my kids to go, but it's gotta be up to them because it's not easy. So the Constitution, it was an evolution. It was put together, as Jason said, from our nation's most brilliant minds and their experience and failures. Okay. So we went from, if you, like I said, if you, you want to know or study something to inspire you, okay, study the United States. First, you know, in the 1760s and 1770s, we were getting our butt kicked by a monarch. Then we stood up and said no. In the War of Independence, we got our butts kicked. You know, George Washington leading us, we lost again and again and again until we finally won, and which is obviously a great victory, you know. And then we established during the War of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, which failed. But we learned from those, and it became the U.S. Constitution, which is now, what, Jason, 245 years old, something like that. Yeah. So it's old. And that's pretty awesome when you've got a document that can survive that long. According to David Barton at wallbuilders.com, the average constitution of any nation over the last, you know, several hundred years, probably a millennia, is last millennia, lasts about 19 years. Yeah. So in that single regard, the United States is exceptional. So this is worth of our study. So from the Annapolis Convention, quote, that a union of the United States merely federal will not accomplish the objects proposed by the Articles of Confederation, namely common defense, security of liberty, and general welfare.
Yeah, so that quote that you just read, right? So This is one of the first of the proposals that the framers came up with at the Constitutional Convention. So one of the first ones was almost word for word what came out of the Annapolis Convention. They said, look, if we're going to tell everybody why we're creating this document, this one's staring us right in the face. It's the reason why we're here. So it says that a union of the states, merely federal, will not accomplish the objects proposed by the Articles of Confederation, namely common defense, security, liberty, and general welfare. Again, almost word for word out of that that Annapolis Convention. And the you know, it, basically, the Articles of Confederation were not doing the job. I mean, that's the bottom line. The next proposal, and there were several proposals. We're going to talk about three of them that cover the breadth of all of the contributions. I mean, they had different wording, some of them, but the second one that came forward on May 30th of 1787 said, quote, resolved that a national government ought to be established consisting of a supreme legislative, judiciary, and executive.
Exactly. So as I mentioned before, the Articles of Confederation only had one branch of government, which was the Congress. And so this is a significant departure from the Continental Congress. So there's so much that they had to, the framers of our Constitution had to do. They had to separate it, and they had to make them separate and equal and make checks and balances, which we'll talk about later. So it's a significant departure.
Yeah, no, it sure was. So we had a proposal that talks about, you know, fixing the Articles of Confederation. We have one that talks about adding basically two branches. And the third one, the third proposal that we'll talk about is says, quote, we the people of the states, and then they list basically all the states, I'm not going to do it here, do ordain, declare, and establish the following constitution for the government of ourselves and of our posterity. So if you remember when we read the preamble in the beginning, so this is starting to sound pretty close, right? So you can see that there's a little bit of here, a little bit, you know, that from here and a little bit from here, and we're going to pull all of that together into one preamble.
Could you imagine? I don't know if you guys ever heard, I think it was Schoolhouse Rock, where they'd sing a song, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Could you imagine that song, we the people of the states of Virginia, New York, Georgia, South Carolina? That would have been a long song. So there is value in brevity, which is illustrated in the preamble of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, and that's why they had different committees in that Constitutional Convention. One of them was called the Committee of Style. For that reason, to bring it together.
There you go. So we went over the evolution of the preamble. Now let's break down the meaning of the elements and a little bit background of the preamble. So, quote, we the people of the United States. Okay. There was a draft that considered saying we the people and the United States, which was not used. Obviously, the power should come from the people. as opposed to we the people and the United States, which is an immediate separation, which is kind of like a monarchy. So those were in charge of us. So that was one thing, proposal that good thing it wasn't included. Next, in order to form a more perfect union, compare to the Articles of Confederation, which was a sort of union, but it was a failed union. So we want to make a more perfect union. In terms of domestic tranquility in the pursuit of being more perfect, at Shays Rebellion, there was no military to quell the rebellion. We had a divided nation because states had different treaties with different countries, which was an open door to pit states against one another. And, you know, e pluribus unum, out of many, one. Okay, so together we are stronger. In fact, in the Civil War, we fought to preserve the union because we are stronger as a union. Next, paying for our debts from national financial solvency. There was a lot of debt that we had from fighting the War of Independence, both at the national and the state level. So we had to develop a mechanism within our Constitution, here, the preamble, that would show to the world that we're going to pay our debts because, you know, a country that's not prosperous is not very strong. And a strong national defense, having national taxes to pay for a military before it was a request to pay taxes. It was kind of like this: dear Virginia, please pay $5 billion. Pretty please. Nope, can't do it, Virginia says. It's been a very tough harvest this year. And no taxes get collected because Back then, under the Articles of Confederation, the Articles of Confederation was led by the Continental Congress. So the Continental Congress would send basically a letter to the state of Virginia and say, will you pay your taxes? It wasn't a requirement. It was a request. Okay, so words matter. So funds for a military soon became very important because into the Barbary Wars, which is the late 1790s through about, 10 to 1819, the Barbary Wars, which was Barbary pilots, our first fight with Muslim extremists. For those of you who don't know, the Barbary Wars, and they were from, by and large, Libya and Morocco. So this was important because, the Marine Corps hymn, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, that's Tripoli, Libya.
Right.
And the Marines were launched from the naval vessels and they conquered our foe who had been attacking our naval vessels.
Right. So all of these things that Matt is talking about were problems with the former Articles of Confederation. And so again, getting back to those, the wording, this was their effort to form a more perfect union.
Yeah. So they were making the mechanism to improve our country. And this is the substance of it. Another issue was slavery, as we've spoken of in the past. 11 of the 13 original colonies or states wanted to get rid of slavery. And later, in pursuit of a more perfect union, the United States Union paid a price of 900 casualties.
900,000 casualties.
900,000, yeah. 600,000 of which have died for the sake of, getting rid of the scourge on our nation of slavery. Okay, what other country in history has paid such a great price in human lives to free a man from slavery? Think about it.
Yeah, it's something to think about. It was almost a very prophetic phrase that they put into a more perfect union. Yes, they were thinking about the problems with the governance of the colonies, but it became pretty prophetic when you think about, eradicating slavery. So the next phrase in the preamble is establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, right? So again, if you think back, remember, we had just talked about how it was only one branch, and that was the Continental Congress. Remember one of the proposals said, hey, we should include a judiciary and an executive. And so here, when they say establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, they're basically saying establishing justice is providing for a judiciary in our nation. And
can I say something there?
Yeah.
So when you first hear the preamble, you think establish justice. You might, and when I first heard that as a child, I thought, yes, do the right thing, be just. We didn't have a judiciary branch, so we didn't have a process to ensure justice. So this is a reason why, you know, the beta version of the Constitution failed, and you needed a system for it, which our the framers of our Constitution were brilliant in that regard.
Right. And in terms of ensuring domestic tranquility, right? So again, going back to the example of Shays Rebellion, it happened in Western Massachusetts. And even though it spilled across, you know, several counties and was inciting people, we didn't have a national militia that was paid. And so they couldn't respond from in a national level. They had to request Massachusetts to send their militia to quell this insurrection. And so ensuring domestic tranquility, I mean, that's one example of making sure that we don't have anything internal, that we can actually enforce the laws, that we can keep the peace from a national perspective. So by adding that executive and the judiciary branch, you have both the means to enforce it and the means to adjudicate any issues, let's say, between states or people who are breaking federal statutes, a way to give them justice, to make sure that they're either prosecuted or set free in accordance with the facts of the case. So those are the very important parts. And this was, again, in the preamble, them telling us, okay, this is part of why we're doing this. We have to add these things to have a more perfect union. So they were basically, you know, addressing the problems that in the Articles of Confederation, so that we had that executive branch and the judicial branch. And then the next phrase is provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare. Now, this phrase almost exactly was brought in from the Articles of Confederation. Again, to Matt's point earlier, they didn't just come up with this out of thin air. You know, some of the stuff they worked on and they came up with in their committees and through debate, but this one they brought in from the Articles of Confederation. So if you look at that document in Article 3, it says, quote, "The said states hereby severally enter into a firm league of friendship with each other for their common defense, the security of their liberties, and their mutual and general welfare."
And so it sounds like a treaty. You know, yeah, it says
you've been saying this the whole time.
Friendship.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is you've been talking about this for several episodes, and you're exactly right. The way that this is phrased in the Articles of Confederation, it makes it sound like a treaty. So those specific words, the common defense and general welfare. So yes, they brought them from the Articles of Confederation, but how do we know what they mean there? Well, in Article 8 of that document, it says, quote, "All charges of war and all other expenses that shall be incurred for the common defense or general welfare and allowed by the United States in Congress assembled shall be defrayed out of a common treasury, which shall be supplied by the several states." So it tells us that general welfare and common defense, that was the phrase that was used to describe how they were going to discharge their debts, all the charges they incurred for the war, all the other expenses. Because if you remember, the Articles of Confederation was actually created during the war. They started realizing, hey, we have no way to pay for these, or we're incurring debts, and we've got to figure out a way that we're going to pay back the lenders. And so in the Articles of Confederation that they came up with during that war, this was how they did it. They said that all charges of war and other expenses that are incurred for the common defense and general welfare. This also ensured that to our lenders that we weren't just saying, oh, that was in the old country, we owed you money, we're a new country now, and we're not going to pay you back. It made sure that they knew that we were assuming the debts from the old Articles of Confederation, and so that we would honor those debts. And so this phrase of general welfare and the common defense has to do with the debts from that war. And we're going to talk more about this. We're going to dig deep into this when we get to Article 1, Section 8, because in that section of the Constitution, it also uses the phrase general welfare And we're gonna go to school on exactly what that means and doesn't mean then. So
take us to school, man. I look forward to that lesson. Okay, and the next portion of the preamble, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This describes the Constitution as the document that it is intended to defend liberty. Notice the word blessing. Okay, liberty is God-given, but we need to defend it, which the preamble articulates. You know, when I was a kid, I went to a public school, and which public schools are typically secular. Of course, now they tend to be more atheistic, because the left has taken over our schools. But, you know, as I became older, I started reading some of our founding documents and some of our national treasures, which are documents like, for example, the Gettysburg Address. One quote from the Gettysburg Address from President Abraham Lincoln. And he says, upon the altar of freedom. That doesn't sound like a phrase that someone who didn't believe in God or someone who didn't have faith. In fact, it's the opposite, that someone who had great faith wrote that. So that's why one of the tenets and the pillars of what Jason and I are here to do, to talk about the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage. One, there are a lot of reasons for that, but without a moral guidepost, a country will go off. Innately, we human beings need to express worship. It's just built in us. And it's healthiest when it's through a faith of truth, or religion is man-made, but a faith and truth is truth. But without that, people will cling to an ideology that is ungodly. And that's what we've seen in our nation today. And that opens the doors to many other problems. And what Jason and I are doing here are steering us back one episode at a time. So I kind of figured out on my own that the founding fathers were men of faith and love the Lord. So another shout out to David Barton at wallbuilders.com, who was kind of one of my first teachers of the importance of America's Judeo-Christian heritage. So, and the last excerpt from the preamble, quote, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Basically, we are officially hereby creating this new Constitution of the United States of America.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's summarize there. So again, it's really just one sentence. The preamble is one sentence, but it's describing why we needed to create a new Constitution, right? It was, you know, we had all the problems that were starting to pop up from the Articles of Confederation, and we had to address those. And so in the course of the preamble, we hit on the major points of what those issues are, and we talk about how we are going to address them. And so it's kind of, the preamble is created from this amalgamation of different proposals that people brought to the table, whether it's from the Annapolis Convention, whether it's from, you know, in some of the committees that they had debates about what it is that they were trying to accomplish in the Constitutional Convention. So it draws, in part, some of its inspiration from the Articles of Confederation when necessary, right? Making sure that we are honoring those debts that we incurred. And so, and once again, one of the main points of it, as we've continued to try to talk to you about, is the purpose of government. It talks about it. Again, it declares the purpose of government is to secure liberty, secure the blessings of liberty. So that's it. That's the preamble to our U.S. Constitution. It kind of kicks us off on this study, this in-depth study. So we're looking forward to, you know, next episode. We'll get into Article 1, Section 1, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Great work today, Jason. Folks, thank you so much for joining us today. If you would like to see the show notes for this and other episodes, please go to patriotcoalitionlive.com. That's patriotcoalitionlive.com. Your support monthly is a big help to us. PatriotCoalitionLive.com/support. That's PatriotCoalitionLive.com/support. Thank you for your support. We have an email address, freedom@PatriotCoalitionLive. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, places like iHeartRadio, Spotify, and where you'd normally get your podcast. Please give us a 5-star rating. We appreciate it. Thanks again, everyone. We'll see you here next time.
See you, gang.
Take care.